Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
You know what that means. Listen, I had to bring the energy to our intro because one, I returned to this podcast that was gone for like 5 weeks. Two, we had Ian Riccobotti and Brian Danielson on commentary today, which I felt like raised the bar for people talking into microphones. And three, it's the Mark Order Podcast, March 11th, 2026. I'm here with Ryan. I am getting ready to move, as you can see by my background being even more bare than usual. You can see a moving box right here. But we are, we're living the dream, Ryan. I'm back from vacay. We got everyone in the chat. Lord Kev, we got Taylor Cannon, we got Big G, we got Pieces, we got Kylie. What's going on, Ryan?
Lord Kev wants to know who the new host is.
My name is, it's Miss Kate Fabe, which is a play on the concept of kayfabe. Ryan, are you familiar with what kayfabe is?
No.
I'll explain it off air, but, it's basically,
I assume it's your way of telling me that everything that happens in the ring is 100% truth.
Not quite. Maybe if you're a fucking mark, you believe that, but you probably don't know what that means either, so. Nope,
I am part of their order.
It is true. We are all a bunch of marks. End of the Mark Order Podcast. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Kylie, congratulations on your new job starting.
Yeah, that's
tomorrow.
Awesome.
That absolutely rules. You know what else rules? This string of dynamites that we're on has just been an insane start to the year. I said the last time I was on here, which was like 6-7 years ago, that it feels like when AEW has some time between pay-per-views, there's just like breathing room to build to stuff. And I feel like I get proven more true with the caliber of television we're getting week over week. But like at minimum, you're just getting an insane banger. And I feel like Speedball and Kyle Fletcher was that tonight, like just crazy. A lot of hot angles and a sick card for this pay-per-view coming up, but we're going to talk about all of that and more. But first, Ryan, how you doing?
I'm a grand old flag. I'm a high-flying flag. I'll be honest with you, did not notice the difference in your background, so I don't know what that says about you or me.
Well, the thing is, it's normally obstructed still. Like, it's a turntable, and normally there's records in the side of it, but, like, I'm usually in front of it moving, so it's hard to tell anyway, but
two turntables and a microphone. Where it's at?
What'd you say?
I started singing Beck. Two turntables and a microphone. Where it's at?
So I was on vacation, sort of. I had an insane travel day back from it yesterday, but in the time that I was gone, my wonderful parents like, I'd already started packing, but they kind of like helped out while I was gone. And my dad reset up my desk to function better, but I don't know where one of the cables to, speaking of microphones, went. And my computer needed an update anyway, so I hadn't been using it because I just kept forgetting. And now I'm like, I don't know where this cable is. So this might be my microphone for the next 3 weeks. Speaking of two turntables and a microphone. But Ryan, we're here. I was supposed to fly in Monday night. That flight kept getting pushed and pushed and pushed. And we were supposed to leave at like 8 o'clock. The last delay, which we had already bailed on, was at 1:30. Thankfully, this is why you fly grown-up airlines, guys. No Frontier, no Spirit bullshit for us. Delta rebooked us for the next day, put up our hotel, and paid for our Uber because we were supposed to leave from Sarasota but ended up leaving from Tampa. It's worth it, guys. It's not worth the it's not worth the hassle of flying shittier airlines. I promise you. Fly the big boy ones. And then, Ryan, as I was coming home yesterday, I'm leaving Penn Station at like rush hour-ish. So wasn't expecting a great experience, but we get like a stop or two in after our transfer, and the engine on my train just dies. Just dies. New Jersey Transit. I didn't know
that could happen.
Just the engine just dies. We were at a stop, and then they went to go like accelerate again, and it just died. And they were like, it's going to be 45 minutes before another train gets out here. And I said, I've had enough. So I took a very expensive Uber ride home. I watched NXT. I did that post show, and then I was back at it today, and blessedly back at the Mark Order. It's been a minute, but how have you been? Hopefully,
I've been good. First of all, I got to address a couple things, Jesse. This is a hat that I was wearing backwards, as I do most weeks, but it's a different hat.
Hi, Jesse.
And he wants me to sing "Push It," push it real good. Peppa. I actually don't know most of the lyrics to that song, so I don't think I could.
I think that is most of the lyrics to that song.
Push it real good. That said, I wasn't on any delayed flights. I wouldn't be flying one of the cheap airlines, as much as I'd like to save the money. I couldn't. I, one, for the reasons you had, and two, I know some of them now are having set seats, but for a long time they weren't.
Yeah, that was a big Southwest thing, was like a every man for himself kind of thing.
You know, and that I couldn't do. I couldn't not know where I was sitting. That would be, I don't need that drama.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have a train that had an engine die, because I didn't know that was a thing that could happen.
It was, honestly, I try to be not forced gratitude bullshit, but like I just try to be aware of like New Jersey Transit isn't great, and like if I'm leaving at rush hour, my expectations are low, and my expectations were pretty low leaving New York City at like 5:45 yesterday. I was expecting for it to be smelly and delayed and packed in like sardines. The transfer and my engine failing, I was like, I had such a long day. And I was like, it's worth the $65 Uber that this is going to be. Because I was so ready to be home. I wanted to see my dog. I wanted to sleep in my own bed. I was not going to sit around and wait 45 minutes for our train to get tended to and then get back home. So I would not wish that upon anybody, but I'm very glad to be back in my regular routine. And I'm glad to be back here. We haven't done this in a minute. No Joe today. I was joking that we are shoeless Joe. And as you guys saw last week, I guess, he has a lot of shoes. So that's a very ironic nickname we gave him today.
Yeah, he didn't even have them all. And his entire wall he had like three racks of shoes.
Oh my gosh. He's like in his old place, like amount of space dedicated to it was incredible.
I think in the new place, he probably just has an entire room of shoes.
He deserves it. Joe just deserves it. Like that's his thing, is his sick shoe collection. And I'm like, you're the best. You deserve to have all the shoes that you want. Jesse Ozog said that his foster kid read his first sonnet today. And I love that you're fostering. That's just like one of the kindest things that you can do in the world. Like, that's incredible. It makes sense that you would do it and not Ryan, because Ryan's just mean and awful. And to have someone that actually can educate people is becoming more and more important in life and this country is wonderful to see. But thanks to everybody for hanging out with us. We're going to get into this Dynamite. I think three things that I noticed from today's episode, and then I'll get Ryan's thoughts, and then we'll dive in. One, I don't know if you guys know this, but I quite like Ian Riccaboni and commissary. Him and Bryan Danielson are such a delightful pair. And Ian, like, before, he just knows how to hype you up for a pay-per-view. He was like, oh, if this is this great, imagine how great it's going to be Saturday or Sunday. Like, he's so, so good. Him and Danielson played off of each other so well today. Two, Kyle Fletcher and Speedball just have, like, a special magic to them. We'll talk about it in more detail in a little bit. But, like, any time that they've crossed paths has been really special. And I feel like this was such a nice example of, like, the younger generation pushing wrestling forward, and had maybe the best Michinoku driver I've ever seen. I have not watched decades of All Japan and New Japan, so that might not mean as much. But just that jumping Michinoku driver was insane today. In three, and this is actually where I want to start, because it's not like a surprise that Hangman and MJF are facing each other in Texas Death. And I don't know, Ryan, if this press conference angle worked tonight, but I'll tell you what. I watch a lot of wrestling, as do you. I watch a lot of WWE as part of my job. You watch it because you are a masochist the first 2 months of the year. No, you watch a lot of wrestling because you like wrestling. There's been such a stale playbook in WWE, and AEW has come out really, really, really fresh. WWE is like, Cody or Punk grabs a mic for an in-ring promo, they get interrupted, there's a DQ finish to end every episode, like all these things, right? AEW, I don't know if what they did tonight worked with this press conference into a brawl thing, but like, just to be ambitious enough to switch shit up like this, I thought was so awesome. Like, I always appreciate when wrestling tries to try fresh things, make it interesting. Like, they did the promo train intro a couple weeks ago where everybody, like, in the beginning of the episode said what they were there for, basically, which felt very old school. We're doing this. Like, these refreshing ways of sustaining stories and feuds and keeping them going, like, I don't know if tonight worked. It seemed polarizing. Some people really liked it. Some people were like, let's never do that again. I'm kind of somewhere in between, and that, like, I felt like it conveyed what it needed to convey. It just felt clunky. But I so appreciate them trying to do stuff different at this point. Like, so much in wrestling has already been done, and part of WWE's biggest weakness right now is just repeating the same tropes and setting things up in really boring ways that I'm like, I appreciate when wrestling is ambitious. And so that was my biggest takeaway. I don't know if anybody said anything earth-shattering, but I really liked that they livened up the product with this. Like, that to me is awesome. Just the attempt to do it. And I don't think it failed. I just don't know if it, like, fully worked. It felt a little clumsy. What did you think of we're going in a different order today. I wanted to start with the last here. What do you think about this?
Sorry, we were in a wacky order last week altogether. So,
there you go. A mark
so order. I agree with you. What'd you say?
A mark order.
Oh, Jesus, not the puns. I'm with you in the sense that it maybe didn't hit as hard as they wanted, but I love when they try anything new, and I appreciate the effort. I think it would have been better off never getting to the ring. I think if they had brawled at the press conference table and maybe ended there, it would have felt even more unique and different. But by going to the ring, it was very, the end of it was more real, more typical wrestling.
Sure.
I think a feud at the table would have been fun and different, and a little bit of, you would have had Brian there and he, like, what do I do? And, you know, because obviously he doesn't want to get involved. But I can't disagree that I love that they're trying things. Even bad things, we'll make fun of it, we'll say it's bad. But in the end, at least you're trying.
Yeah.
You know, and this wasn't bad. I just bit my tongue for some reason. This wasn't bad. This was just average on a night that was incredible. So I think that's part of the thing too. The whole night was incredible. So what's amazing to me is this is legitimately a repeat feud from a year ago.
Almost exactly a year ago.
And it doesn't feel like it at all.
I think what's nice about it too is also like this is the shortest AEW presser of all time, so good for them. I think part of what did work about it is like at pressers, MJF is always half in and out of character anyway. So I think that's why, like you said, I don't think it was bad. It was just a little weird because you're doing a presser as a part of a show. It wasn't like after the show. But to your point, like this doesn't feel like reheated nachos because it seems like both characters are in such different places from where they were a year ago that this feels like it evolved. Like, at that point, MJF was on this like Hangman did nothing wrong kick of like calling him a hypocrite because he was just done with his heel run. Like Adam Page was just turning face at that point. And now a year later, MJF has this ability to, and I think it really emboldened him in the feud. And 2 weeks ago, I really liked when MJF was kind of digging in on like a couple things. One, just the disparity between them. Like, I love it when a heel is like, I just don't like you. I don't like the way you dress. I don't like the way you talk. I don't like the way you go about business. But then when he also said like, man, you're the guy that wins and can't hold on to the title, huh? Like, you're the guy who wins and then just doesn't have what it takes. Because that is such a different place than he was a year ago. Like, Heyman was just on the way to his redemption arc. And now he's won it and he lost it pretty quick. And MJF has something different to say than he did a year ago. And MJF's character is also in a stronger place than he was a year ago. So I think that's part of why it doesn't feel stale, to your point. Like, this is almost a year to the weeks, right? And I feel like because both characters have been so propelled forward, this is very interesting. And we have this giant stipulation on this thing. Are you thinking that Hangman loses and has to stay away from the title? Or do you think that we get kind of like a surprise win here?
I hate the stipulation. I do. Yeah. I think it killed Cody when he was in AEW. It killed Cody because it prevented him from telling certain stories. He could never go against anyone who was the champ because it prevented him. Now, AEW now has like 1,000 more belts. So Cody only had TNT at the time, so it was like he could only go for TNT or heavyweight. Now it's like Hangman could go after the national, the international, the continental. I don't know, but they'll probably make up more. But
the galactic, the interstate,
the interstate, the they're gonna just start doing them by state, the New Jersey title. California title, the I'm trying to think of some more ridiculous things to think.
We'll get down to school districts at some point. It'll be the Lackawanna County Public School.
I love that you were Lackawanna County in his office pull there. It's not exactly the same as Cody because he does have more avenues. Now, obviously, even with Cody, you didn't need a belt to tell a story, but there's only so many stories you could tell without trying for one.
Sure.
Before it becomes, what are we doing? So there are more avenues. I still hate it, though. I don't like limiting a character's storytelling. He's going to lose. I'm almost firmly believe that he's going to lose, and this is how they get him away from the title for a while. Because truthfully, I love Hangman, but he is always floating around the title and this title only. He doesn't go, like, he had trios for a little while. But other than that, this is the only title he really floats around. So did Jesse Ozark just make a Beastie Boys joke with Intergalactic and then he followed it up with Planetary?
That's incredible. The Beastie Boys, that's the real triple B of it all.
But it's, I get it. Like, you're trying to freshen up your main event scene, and this is a way to pull him away completely from the main event scene, but you're going to have to put him back in at some point. And at that point, you have two options. you have, well, actually you have three, and I don't think the third is the most unrealistic. The first is he goes heel, and he just says, I don't give a fuck what that stipulation was. That was a self-made stipulation. I'm not, like, you'd have to really retcon it, but you could go back and say, like, I never signed any documents saying I wouldn't go for it. I just told you I wouldn't. And now I'm not keeping my word, which is very anti-Hangman. But yeah, that would be if he really went for a real heel run, where, like, he was against everything he's ever been. The second way is you have to tell some story where he has to go for it. Like, they've floated this story a couple times. Like, this is actually... this is the story they floated when he wanted versus Mox, of like, you know, I have to save AEW, but you'd have to be more intense. It couldn't be like a Mox thing. It would have to be a legitimate, like, Hangman's your only hope. And I don't know how you get there. The third, and it kind of plays off the second, is that MJF relents on the stipulation for some reason. And it would have to be something I have no idea why MJF would ever do that. But he'd have to come in and say, Hangman, you have to go for the title. I've created the story. Hold on. I've backed into it by talking. And I'm not your Tuesday, Monday, Sunday, Wednesday. Well, I'm Wednesday, Sunday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday co-host. I'm your Wednesday host. So I'm not usually as creative as this, but I backed it up. You have MJF doesn't need to have the full stipulation of Hangman, but MJF needs to wrestle. It could be a year, 2 years down the road, whenever. He wrestles someone, and he puts up the stipulations added that if he loses to that person, he can't challenge them again. Not the whole title, them. But no one can beat that person except Hangman. So that's MJF. It could be Swerve. Swerve could be the guy. And MJF could go to Hangman and say, I want to have a shot at the title again, but I'm not allowed and no one else can beat him. I will eliminate your clause that you can't go for, but you got to beat Swerve.
I think you are dancing around the theory that I like best that I've heard of that, because Swerve is heel right now and he's the most dangerous man in AEW. He's the one that costs Hanger at Revolution. And because Hanger was cost the match, him being able to wiggle out of it is a lot easier because he didn't really beat MJF. And B, like you talked about that idea of needing to save AEW. If he's saving AEW from Swerve, like there's a lot of ways you could go there. I hate the first thing you said of him just going heel because, as is pointed out by my frequent co-host Alex Pulowski, and I fully agree with him, even when he was a heel, he was not a liar. Like, that man is true as the North Star to his word. Like, he fully followed through on everything he said he was gonna do as a heel. His motivations were just, like, way more evil, right? So I don't want him to suddenly be a liar, because that's not the character that he is. The one thing that I do like with this stipulation is there has been such a logjam at the top of the card. And I agree with you, some breathing room from it would be super helpful. I think that in AEW in general, there's not enough card mobility, meaning like people don't go from lower titles up to higher titles and vice versa in general. And I would like to see more of that. So Hanger going on a TBS title run at some point or whatever, I think could be really cool. Especially because Hangman's an honorable champion. So him being a workhorse champion, I mean, he's a cowboy. Workhorse, hello, it's right there. Him holding, you know, Okada's title or something. Like, I think there's interesting things that you can do with Hanger away from that. But I think eventually maybe you go like Ospreay Fletcher Swerve or Ospreay Kenny Swerve or something, that like at the end of the year ish Swerve's the one holding the title and then Hangman comes back way later for it or something could be really cool. How that looks is yet to be seen. I do think Will Ospreay is probably a title holder at some point this year. I do love the way the top of the card is functioning right now. I think it's been so refreshing. I love that Brody King is still kept hot and that he's facing top guys. I really think like they're giving Kevin Knight world title shots and making it feel somewhat organic. Like they've done a really, really good job this opening stretch of the year, and I hope they keep that going. And I also love that MJF is just like taking it to the indies too. Like that seems to be a priority in this title reign. And I like that they've used it as a way to catapult people to signings and giving them cool matches. So I am with you on all of that. I don't like the stipulation either. I will say, to the point of Cody, a lot of people have made that point, as you have. And it's true. But I also think, like, Cody was Mr. TNT champion. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't think that killed him in AEW as much as people think. I think they just got into a creatively stale place with him. I think they could have wiggled out of it. You could always write these things away. But I'm with you in the general principle of, like, I don't like it. And I also don't like how we got there and that Hangman.
He had no reason.
He had no reason. Like, I need you to agree for it to be a stipulation match is just a weird, weird thing.
Yeah, like, it bothers me because it makes a Hangman believe he can't beat MJF normally.
Yeah, which he's done. So
yeah, I also, but the only thing, my other issue with it, and I don't want to harp on it too long, is that people are going to know, like, when, and it happened with Cody, that when he lost and had that thing, it was always part of the conversation. No matter what he did, at some point it would come up, but he can't go for the title, but he can't. And it's like, it becomes, you could now, you, if you do that well, great. If you keep that as like a back-burning item so that when it his moment to come back for it, it's awesome. It could also become distracting. It could also make the next belt he goes for feel less than. Because sure. It's like, well, I'm only going for this.
It's default to something else.
Yeah. So you have to play it all very carefully. I would prefer them to do what you said, like, have more flexibility between, more movement between the cards, between the titles. Like, Scott George is asking, she's saying Hangman should be national champion. I'm not disagreeing with that, but I like the idea of him just doing that because he did that versus doing that because he lost the match to MJF and now he has to.
I agree. I also feel like, I don't know. It feels to me like Swerve is gearing up for like a generational heel run too. And I feel like costing Hanger is like such an easy way to have like the most heat anybody could ever get. So I'm looking forward to that. I just love Swerve as a heel. Like, I think it's great. And I'm excited to see what's coming out of all of this. I'm also, I feel like one thing that people are maybe underestimating about this too, I'm very excited to see like deathmatch MJF. Because we have not really, we got dog collar match MJF. We haven't really gotten like ultra violent MJF. And I'm excited to see that side of him because his character is going to be at odds with the fact that he's doing it. And I just, he's such a good in-ring storyteller that I'm very.
Yeah, I don't know if I want him, winning a no rules match though. That's part of the problem too, is like, I kind of like that he has the weakness of he can beat you in a straight up wrestling match and he can beat you when he cheats, but he struggles when like it gets too violent. I just felt like that was a nice character flaw, which I guess people have to overcome character flaws. So this could be his character development, which is like, hey, you thought I was bad at this and now I'm good. I just always liked that as like the thing that the thing that scares him.
But I think you're right in that we're going to see him not be able to cheat and he's going to try to, but that's why I think like, is it a Hurt Syndicate return? Cause maybe they're not fully on bad terms. Is it Swerve costing Hanger? Like, I think something is up there, but I look forward to him not being able to cheat. Cause this is a lawless land. I think that'll be a fun in-ring story to tell, but let's keep moving along this episode of Dynamite. Hi, Greg Terry. Hi, Scott George. We got all sorts of people hanging out in the chat. Thank you. Thank you.
Actually, hold on. I want to keep, but this is a, they've, Jesse and Pieces have kind of put themselves onto a story that may work in terms of transitioning Hangman out. Jesse said, Piece saying, oh my God, Jesse said he should hire a small army. And then Piece said, oh my God, he's going to hire the Don Callis family. I don't want it to be the Don Callis family, but then again, they have belts. If someone comes in and screws Hangman, it is a natural transition that that would be who he goes against, which would put him instantly in a different feud for different titles.
My thing is, it's so stable heavy. And like, we just got done with Hangman being in a trio. And now it feels like he's just going to have to go get other friends. So we'll see. We'll see. It feels like something pivotal is going to happen at Revolution, though, with that. Like, this is way too big of a stipulation. MJF is a pretty early champion. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, because I trust that they have a plan. They've, with particularly Hangman, they've proven that to be true so much more often than not. So I'm looking forward to it. This pay-per-view is going to be incredible. And I always love what we get from both MJF and Hanger in the ring, much less the two of them together. Let's move along and talk about Kyle Fletcher versus Mike Bailey, because this was absolutely freaking insane. That jumping Michinoku driver was bananas. The poison rana on the apron, the avalanche poison rana, the time and adventure attempts. Kyle Fletcher countering with that nasty, nasty spike and the interference finish here. Shout out to Dave Meltzer. What's in the front crowd with Okada? So funny. But Okada distracting the referee and Fletcher using the screwdriver to gouge out Mike Bailey's eyes, smashing him with the title belt to retain. At one point, there was like a 299999999 from Mike Bailey onto Kyle Fletcher. The crowd was up in arms about it. We get a promo later of Mike Bailey saying, I had you beat. The better man didn't win tonight because you're a big fat cheater rat. Kyle Fletcher continues to prove that he is, in fact, the prototype of a star. And this match felt like what modern wrestling can and should be to me. Like, I was so gripped by this match, and it felt like we got this really updated wrestling style in a context that made sense and felt like they were both trying to win the match and fight the whole time. Like, and they beat the hell out of each other, and it was just one of those matches that you have to say, you just have to go and watch it, because it was absolutely incredible. I loved it. Match of the night. There's been so many matches early in this year on AEW TV that you're like, match of the year candidate? TV match of the year already? Like, there's been like three of those. You could say that about Fletcher and Ciampa. You could say that about Keddy and Swerve. And it's just, it makes for really entertaining TV. And to me, it's the vehicle that makes these episodes go by, make it feel like it goes by in 10 minutes. Like, it is so much fun to have this high caliber of a match on free TV. Absolutely nuts. What did you think?
This is where I'm glad that you're back, because you know the names of moves, and I just say awesome thing he did and then awesome other thing he did. The only thing that will keep this from being match of the year, and I'm being serious, this is too early in the year.
Yeah.
We'll have recency bias, but it was incredible. I knew Mike Bailey wasn't going to win, and I still bought in at points where yeah. I thought, oh my God, are they actually going to do some weird thing where Mike Bailey wins and then it has repercussions we didn't expect in the Don Callis family? Or is that going to be how Kevin Knight gets what makes Kevin Knight jealous? Because my theory, you haven't been here. My theory is that Kevin Knight's turning heel. He's been getting too many. You got the swerve interactions. You have too many singles matches. He's had times on the mic. It's just clear they're setting him up to be heel.
And Mike Bailey was not like, where was my tag team partner tonight? Like that. There's been some very big indicators of that. I agree with you that that's happened.
Yeah. So I thought maybe I was starting to buy in, like, does he win to make Kevin Knight jealous? Yeah, you know what? I'm going to stop right now. We got some ringers in the chat, some bias I'm seeing towards you, and I don't know if I appreciate it.
I see someone that is related to someone I know. My last name is Fabe, so I don't know.
I know it's Fabe, but still, I know there's ties. I am a goat,
so I don't know what your issue is, but it's definitely not my cousin Michael.
this was, first of all, Kyle Fletcher is putting himself out there already as wrestler of the year. I mean, there's just no way other way to look at it.
Absolutely. He's, like,
the two of the three matches you named involved Kyle Fletcher.
Yeah.
Mike Bailey style, he knows who he is, and I greatly appreciate that.
Yeah.
He kicks and he flips. Like, that's who he is. Like, he doesn't try to be overly technical, which I'm not saying he can't be, but that's his style, is to go in and kick you and hit you and then do some crazy poison rana and dives and stuff like that. And I remember you said it, and I really respect that. It makes his matches more fun because they don't feel the same by any means, but you don't. When wrestlers try to go outside their comfort circle, sometimes it does not work.
Correct.
And he wrestles very much within it. What I love about this too is this match could feel random, except it's in service to a story. It's in service to multiple stories. This is in service to the Don Callis story against Hangman and Jet Knight Rodeo. And this is the story of Kevin Knight possibly splitting away from Jet Speed. And this is in the story of Fletcher willing to cheat, we'll talk about earlier, where Dikesh does not. Like, this is in service to all those stories. It wasn't just a random match, but it was so incredible. So, like, I love that no one would have predicted they'd have this match, because it wasn't, I mean, they would have once they heard that Bailey Sam going after the TNT, but before that, no one would have predicted it. And yet they made it work within three or four different stories. And then they went out and had just one of the most incredible matches you could have. And then it was on free TV.
Yeah. And I think last Collision, they even like referenced Speedball beating Kyle Fletcher in the C2. So they're pulling in C2 math from December. Like, I love that kind of stuff. And to your point about Mike Bailey, just knowing who he is in the ring, it's such a special blend, because you normally hear like flippy guy, or you hear like great striker, technical, strong, slow, plotting, whatever. He's such a unique combination of guy who can do some really athletic and acrobatic shit, but it's always feeling like a fight with him. And I really appreciate that as someone who has a trickier time maybe getting into like some of the more aerial style of things. Because he's just so assertive in that way of just like using it in all the right ways. And I so appreciate it. This match was amazing. To your point about Kyle Fletcher, like his match versus Ciampa, you could certainly put the end of the Mark Briscoe feud in there as an incredible match. He is obviously under the, you know, raised by Will Ospreay a bit. And I feel like he's going to be in so many Wrestler of the Year conversations, and we're not that far off from him being best in the world conversations, like probably 3 or 4 years from now. Like, I really feel like we're pretty close.
And he's put on some mass in the best way. So it's kind of like Ospreay did, where it took him from being this string bean who did all these cool moves to being like, no, he can stand next to the heavyweights and not look out of place. And he's tall, which is always underestimated by him. He's just incredible. Like, there's no other way to say it. And if we want to talk why AEW is entertaining and in a groove right now versus maybe some other places, part of it is they're willing to just do this match and say, you two go out and do what you want. You two go out and have that match versus all right, you're on TV, you're going to get 15 minutes, five of it's going to be entrances, and then wrap it up quickly.
Yeah, 7 minutes or whatever. Yeah. Their Wrestle Stats, who does such a good job, had put out a thing that, like, on average, AEW puts on 110 minutes of wrestling in a two-hour show, which when you factor into commercials, is actually pretty fucking crazy. Like, 110 wrestling minutes on a wrestling show is very, very high when you add commercial breaks into that. So that was really cool. Of course, only like 9 of them were women's minutes, but on the whole, like, they know what their presentation is. And I think we saw that blossom in 2025. And I think that's very vibrant here in 2026. Like, I feel like, I don't know, in the middle to end of last year, I think we got really into, like, they're a four-match show. They're going to give you four matches when they're doing it right. And I think they didn't really deviate from that. And once they clicked into that, everything started to take shape around it. And they don't overload these Dynamites anymore with backstages. Like, they've spread that out with Collision. They've spread that out with talent rotation. They've done a really good job. I want to call out, everyone knows I'm a TMDK sicko, but I absolutely love Peace's comparison of Robbie Eagles and Mike Bailey, because it's the same kind of thing. And I love, love, love that you drew that parallel, because it's exactly that. It's like you have the Robbie Eagles limb reaper guy who can do so much as far as like off the ropes and whatever, but it still feels like you're in a combat sport. And that's absolutely the same vibe I get from Speedball. Go watch this match. This match is incredible. It's easily match of the night. To your point about Kyle Fletcher's size too, it was so funny. People were like, yo, is MJF short? Did we not realize this? And it's like, no, MJF is average height, but Kyle Fletcher is a low-key 6'5". Like, people don't realize this about Kyle Fletcher, but they have a segment later. That feels like it's going to be a match at some point, Kyle Fletcher and MJF. But the two of them in the same frame, everyone was like, is MJF actually like 5'8"? And it's not that. Kyle Fletcher is just like an easy 6'5", 6'6". So, yeah, he's in everything you want in a wrestling star, and AEW was very wise for locking him down and extending that contract when they did. I thought that was a good, good call. Where should we go next? You want to take it back to the top? You want to talk some John Moxley and Claudio versus...
Take it back.
Takeshita and Etchicero.
Sure, we'll take it back. Take it back.
I was going to say, you want to run it back, Jey Uso style?
No, I don't ever want to do that.
Let's talk about this, because this was really fun. They've kind of given Mox what used to be the Orange Cassidy slot when he had the international title. Like, you're just going to open every episode of Dynamite. Absolutely adored Etchicero doing his like ritual hand motions to annoy Claudio. That cracked me up. Takeshita and Mox just like absolutely trading bombs early in this. I thought we were moving on from the Death Riders and the Don Callis family, but they're just gonna fight each other forever, I guess. But you got a blue thunder bomb on Moxley, you get Claudio hitting that giant swing, you get a sneaky little eye poke from Claudio for the win, which was very fun. You have Mox and Claudio with the W. Nice to see Claudio get a win. I don't want him to get lost in this because he's such a beast. But after, Mark Davis and Lance Archer attack the Death Riders, and Don Callis tries to convince Takeshita to smash Mox with the chair, but Takeshita refuses. Feels like we'll be signaling here that he's taken Moxley's title at Revolution is what it kind of like leaned on. And I would love that, because then the Don Callis family is just, I mean, dripping in gold. And it could lead to the long-awaited end of the Death Riders, though infinitely better now than they were a year ago. As is a lot of things on AEW, honestly. So what do you think? Do you think Takeshita is beating Jon Moxley? And how did you like this match? This show had a lot of wrestling for a go-home. And I like that about AEW.
Tons of wrestling. So first I want to acknowledge that no matter what wrestling product you're watching, no matter how good it's going, they're always going to have at least one story feud that just seems to drag. Just always.
And
this is AEW's at the moment. The match was fun. I mean, listen, you get these four in a ring, it's not going to be not fun. I mean, that's the thing about it. As soon as I saw Hashishero, I'm like, and I can never say his name slowly. I always got to do it quickly. Hashishero. As soon as I saw him, I was like, well, that's who's taking the pin. You just knew it. He was, I love him, but he's not in the league of the other three in the ring.
No, and honestly, the other, Hashishero is amazing everywhere you put him. Takeshita and Claudio and Takeshita and Mox all have really special chemistry. So I was like, he's barely going to be in this match until it's time for him to take the pin. But he got some ring time and he's a lot of
fun. When I say not in the league, I mean in AEW league.
Like, right, in presentation wise, how AEW presents people, yeah.
So I knew he was going to take the loss. I'm glad, like you said, they gave it to Claudio. He needs to get some pins out again, especially because I still count on him being the one that steals the Death Riders from Mox. I loved all of this. I don't want to complain about any of it. My only thing is they finally, the if Revolution isn't the apex, I don't want to say the apex, the end of the Takeshita story with the Don Callis family and the Death Riders, I'm going to be extremely annoyed. He's going to lose, which is fine. I think the Don Callis family cost him, maybe inadvertently.
Okay.
But my theory is that the Don Callis cost him inadvertently, and then they turn on him because he won't listen to them, and he gets mad at them.
I wouldn't hate if that's... I don't think we're anywhere near done with this. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I think we're still going to have Okada Takeshita one-on-one. The question is... is Takeshita holding a title and Okada holding a title and we reunite those? Or does Takeshita lose to Mox here and Takeshita goes after Okada and just wins his title?
Well, let me rephrase this. When I say the end of the... when I say the end of the story, I mean the end of this story.
Sure. This
the next story is
in the Iliad that is the Don Callis family. Sure. Yeah.
This is the Iliad and now we're going on the Odyssey after. This is the story they're telling right now is Takeshita's slow turn, the Takeshita's slow split from the Don Callis family. That story needs to end on Sunday. Then the story becomes Takeshita versus the Don Callis family. That's fresh and new, and I'm okay with that now.
Does Kyle Fletcher go with him, is the question.
No, apparently Kyle Fletcher's all bought in, which is just...
okay.
I'm actually having...
even though it's his lover, Takeshita.
Well, that does present...
it's his lover. They are in love a little bit.
It does present a little bit of a... But here's the problem, is they're not ready to turn Fletcher face. They're just not. And... though, now that I think about it, I'll give me you. You've kind of talked like besides the lover thing, but you know you have
the story though. Like, is the custody of Kyle Fletcher what we're going after? Is an interesting possibility?
Because you're talking like, okay, yes, he cheated tonight, and okay, but he had a stare down with MJF where he was not happy with MJF. His other feud could end up being Ciampa, who's now recently heel. Now, AEW doesn't shy away from heel versus heel, so it doesn't mean he's going to turn. But I am noticing they're lining up some feuds that have him on the opposite end of the, and the fans do love Fletcher.
Yeah. And there's something kind of cool if, like, Will Ospreay turned face and got away from the Don Callis family, and his protege having to learn it for himself could be a pretty cool connection. I also don't hate Kyle Fletcher staying with the Callis family either for a little bit longer. Like, it's a really interesting possibility that I don't think has a wrong outcome. BG asking, but would a face Kyle Fletcher really work, though? I think the so crowd this is, would love it, and I think he would just need to figure out how to wear socks.
Well, I was actually going to say this when you brought up Ospreay. When he, if he turned face, he cannot be Ospreay and like loving the crowd. Like he can be okay with the crowd. He's got to be closer to what Swerve was face, or even a little Swerve. He's got to be closer to what Swerve was face, which is he doesn't stray too far from who he is as a person. He's just far less antagonistic. Like he doesn't outright fight with the crowd, and who he's targeting tend to be heels.
I agree with that. And I also think that like, I want to see Kyle Fletcher versus the people that are like Kyle Fletcher versus Andrade, Kyle Fletcher versus Lance Archer. Like even the quote unquote scrubs of the Callis family versus Kyle Fletcher is something I want to see. And that's why I think Takeshita being the motivation to get there is a really interesting call. Because I think it lets him turn face without him having to turn into like a goody two shoes about it. But I also do think that Kyle Fletcher is probably destined for, I don't think a title run in 2026, but a top of the card type of run in 2026, because he is just, every time he gets in the ring, it's kind of like Ospreay was the past couple years of like, this guy, it's just a five-star match every time he gets in the ring. It's nuts. Let's talk about this Brody King standby match, because he kills a jobber in 15 seconds. And then we have a masked man angle. I swear to God, they had to have been trolling WWE with this, but Swerve is impossibly cool, so he kind of pulled it off, but Brody King murders a jobber, RIP Brody King. And Swerve attacks him from the crowd and goes to choke him out. But Brody King breaking the chain, which is a really cool touch here. They brawl until security separates them. And that feud is like escalating quick. And I love that they used a standby match to be... Brody doesn't need to be putting on a 15-minute match on a program that has long matches on it already. This is how you build a monster that's a babyface, is you have him go out there and squash someone. You have him break the chain of Swerve, which is so fun. I love that this was how they chose to advance the storyline this week. I am kind of surprised that Swerve is not on the San Jose shows, because he's just so over on the West Coast. I'm wondering if it's because he's so over on the West Coast, they don't want him getting cheered. But I love the way that they chose to advance this story tonight. It was such a good use of like 3 TV minutes. I thought it was really well done.
So the poor jobber, I mean, I'm sure he had a name.
RIP.
The masked man angle was hilarious. Notice though, that they tell you who it is right away. They don't drag it out for 6 weeks when everyone knows who it is. And then the breaking of chains. I absolutely love when they have wrestlers do like these incredible feats, like just it, and I'm being sincere. Like it's not a,
and
not
Brody
a joke.
King's like, the one who should do it too. That's just like yeah, who yeah, the guy absolutely. Is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like I love like Speedball shouldn't do it. Because what are we doing here? I mean, it just like he broke the chains. Like, come on. We're like,
it's, I love that it's someone we want to root for too. It's yes. not like, oh, look how big and intimidating and scary I am. It's just us being like, fuck yeah, Brody King.
Do you know
these chains?
in one of the, and this is going to be probably one of my geekiest pieces of knowledge. And if I'm wrong, I apologize to the geeks out there. But I'm fairly certain one of the earliest ways comic books showed how strong Superman was by a cover in which he breaks chains.
There you go. Well, if there's anything Swerve's going to know, it's going to be comic book world, I feel like.
And now we have Brody King breaking chains. Like, just incredible. But you're right. It was a good 3-minute to 5-minute segment to be like, we advanced the story. Now Brody King looks dangerous because Swerve had previously looked dangerous. Now Brody King does, because Swerve even got the jump on him and didn't win. And he was sent running. And truthfully, Brody King just looks like a dangerous guy. I mean, he
does.
I will forever. Oh, Jesse, we got a geek in the crowd. Jesse knew Superman number 11. I will forever remember Oh, apparently that shot is the animatics for the DC Studios logo.
Oh, yeah.
Get me. I know some stuff, I will forever remember when you and I went to ROH and Brody King was in a match and they threw the streamers and it just hit his shoulder and he just looks and goes, that was terrible. Like, just the judgment in his whole look of like, he wasn't mad that the streamers, just the fact that the streamers never unraveled and just hit him as a whole thing in the shoulder. And just, how, like, the judgment in his eyes of like, how bad are you?
They've done, to your point, like, Brody King comes across so dangerous, and this whole feud was born out of being the most dangerous man in AEW. So simple, so beautifully done. Jamie from Perio Magazine in the chat saying, I immediately thought of Kate with the black hoodie reveal. I was sick of the black hoodies, not to be a hipster about this, but like before everybody got sick of the black hoodie reveals, because there's been like 20 of them, and I got really tapped out at like number 11, and then they've only gotten worse. So just not great. Not great there. But Swerves is pretty cool. They pulled that off pretty well. It certainly felt like a troll. It certainly felt like a troll. Let's keep moving along. This was a very wrestling heavy show, and I love that for a go home, but there's not like a lot of backstages to talk about tonight because there just weren't that many. And we started with the longest non-wrestling segment of them all. So let's talk some Willow and Persephone. We had Willow Nightingale and Persephone hyping up their match. They're arguing about who hit Mercedes harder, which I think is so fun. Like, I'm so excited for the Mercedes return because I think she's just going to be so unraveled when she comes back. But this sets up the TBS title match that we get later tonight. Persephone was saying that she wants more gold than she's got. This was really, really fun. I feel like it was designed to make Persephone look good if you're not as familiar with her CMLL work, because she looked really, really strong in this. She has this fallaway slam and springboard moonsault, Willow cannonballing people. We got Ian Riccaboni doing the Willow rap, thank God. And Persephone almost winning with that thrust kick in this. This was a really, really, really fun match. This finishes with Willow countering and getting a roll up. And I just love how much offense Persephone got in because she's a champion too. And then after Willow says, I'm doing double duty, I'm calling out Lita Cross for the TBS title match on the 0 hour for Revolution, which I think is a great buy-in match. And then we are going to have that tag team match later in the night. I think that's a great way to kind of let people see what Lita Cross can do. Speaking of some Aussies, I know we got Jamie in the chat. He can speak to it better. So follow Jamie at Wrestle Radio Australia and Perio Magazine, because they have a very, very, very talented scene, very well covered. But yeah, the chat is saying like Persephone just comes across as such a star. And I felt the same way tonight. I think she really, really did. What did you think of our title match here? And how do you feel about double duty for some of these gals on Revolution?
Well, you're going to have double duty when you unfortunately give your title, two titles to the same person, instead of spreading it out and allowing more talent to have time on TV, which would be better for the women and better for fans. But
it would, I will say, it just feels so blatantly obvious that the injury to Penelope, like, it, I was like, those titles were supposed to chain and we weren't supposed to be in this situation.
Oh, 100%, like, 100%.
Yeah.
But
I agree with you on the whole, enough double champions. We don't need that.
But isn't she, aren't multiple women doing double duty now?
Are they? We got Marina and Tony, right?
Willow versus
Lena one-on-one, and then...
And then the tag match.
And then the tag match, yeah. So, both
so Lena
them
and Willow are both doing double duty. Like, again, you can't even give me two fucking separate stories with her? Like...
Well, yeah. I have a little more grace around this one just because I so firmly believe we weren't supposed to be in this situation, and I feel like... Now they're trying to reverse engineer. They're trying to protect Willow and, like, I dropped the tag titles because I've been distracted, right?
But I have no problem if you want to say Willow double duties because of what happened with the injury and she's facing the tag match. But she shouldn't have a singles match against Lena.
That's
Lena should not be pulling double duty. Lena should win the tag match, and Willow should wrestle. Tim McFall is not happy that he's agreeing with me.
That's a common theme, yeah.
But she should lose a tag match, but win the singles match against. You could have done this. You know, there's plenty of other talent you could do out there and have her wrestle. And I understand that the Penelope injury messed things up, but the way you pivot is not. This isn't the now. The only thing I'll say, it is unique.
Sure.
But what's going to happen? Is Willow going to lose both titles in one night? And now we've once again walked into the some person having two titles, one of them the tag, and I don't like that at all.
I was going to say, do we think it's an opening for something? A Dakota Kai debut, a whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what that something would be. I'm a little easier on it because one of them is the 0 hour. Like, that's not the worst in that regard. But I also don't love it. But if it's a way for us to put an end to the Babes of Wrath, I don't hate that either. Of just like, I can't keep doing this and focus on my singles title. I'm kind of okay with that too.
I just don't want her losing both, and then now Lena is the double champ, and it's like we're back in the same spot.
No, I feel like if they were going to do that, you'd put it on Megan Bain, just because she's already been such a protected force. But there was a theory floating around. I don't think Mercedes is coming back yet, but like, Willow took everything from Mercedes, and now this unhinged version of Mercedes comes back to take everything from Willow that she can. But I feel like that story has maybe isn't it? Because I don't think Mercedes is done dropping her titles, and I don't think you. I don't know. Doesn't feel right now. I will say
no.
I don't know if that was the original plan, but it feels off.
Again, this just comes from don't make a person hold two titles and you don't find yourself into this.
Yeah. But Babes of Wrath never felt like they should have been the inaugural tag champs there. That has always felt weird to me. Like
that didn't bother me so much because I thought it was a way to establish like that, like a fun first team or whatever. But I didn't count on Willow instantly winning the TBS title right after they won. Like,
wait, why am I biased? What did I do? I want
to
know.
We'll have to find out.
Speak your truth, Tim McFowell.
But my point being, like, when they won, Bola wasn't TBS champ, and something about bagels. You're biased over bagels. You would support New York over Montreal.
Oh yeah, 100%.
But my argument, I was confused too, and then I had to go back and read. My argument is that at the time they won, Willow wasn't even considered for the TBS title. And then suddenly, I don't know, she won it in a surprising win. Babes of Wrath would have been a much more fun first tag champs if they didn't instantly screw it up with giving Willow TBS. I do want to acknowledge that Persephone's going to be a future star in this company, I should say. Yeah. And more of her would be excellent. Hell, they should have maybe just saved the Willow Persephone match for the pay-per-view.
I want to give a quick shout out to, I know my boss, Fightful Sean, interviewed Rocky Romero, who just had wonderful things to say about Persephone and said that she was kind of like a little bit of a Rocky Romero project in that sense, that he's been kind of bringing her along, and she looked outstanding tonight, and has all the star power that you could want someone. She's fantastic. Wouldn't have hated that on the pay-per-view either. I agree with you. Intrigued to see what we do in general after this next cycle clears out. If Forbidden Door happens, like, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of juice in like the New Japan versus AEW thing right now, because New Japan is in such a reestablishing mode. So I feel like that probably means a wider integration with CMLL, and seeing like Takeshita holding a belt and Claudio holding that belt before, and Persephone being such a big star there, like how that integration folds into, and just like the expansion of Lucha in 2025 and Adam Page doing his promo in Spanish, that like, and CMLL selling out Arena Mexico 52 weeks in a row or whatever. Like, I'm very intrigued to see if Forbidden Door takes a different shape this year and how Persephone falls into that. But let's keep moving along. Thank you to everybody in the chat for hanging out with us. We appreciate it when you chat along with us. It's more fun that way, especially when you guys harass Ryan. It's very fun for me specifically. So thank you. Are we down to our last match already? I think. Nope, we got two more. We got Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy versus Gabe Kidd and David Finlay. And my God, if you told me Roddy Strong was going to be conglomerating by the end of this, Ryan, showing up looking like a theater stagehand in his all black outfit. This version of Gabe Kidd is so much better than the one he showed up as. Finlay, I think if you watched NXT last night and then you watched AEW, you would be like, I believe that David Finlay made the correct call, because that Birthright faction is going nowhere. the dogs are going to be the dogs, baby. Gabe Kidd, David Finlay, Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy. This was all sorts of fun. Darby's flying everywhere, as usual. Orange Cassidy's got his pocket offense going. Danielson adding so much on commentary as well with this. But Darby Allin, missile drop kicking Gabe Kidd through a chair was a really nice spot. And then finish comes when Clark Connors interferes with a tire iron, allowing Gabe Kidd and Finlay to hit that pile driver combo. Only complaint about this is we had two interference finishes. It's a go home. So I'm a little more lenient, but I get enough interference finishes in the rest of my wrestling weeks. But Gabe Kidd and Finlay standing tall. But post-match, Roddy Strong feigns like he's going to be a dog, but he actually helps out Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin and helps fight them off. Good for Roddy for seeing the ways of conglomerating. And I hope this means that Kyle O'Reilly is coming back soon, because I miss him. Thanks.
I do find it funny that I agree with you that I like this version of Gabe Kidd more than what we've seen. Though it feels like when they first brought him in, they weren't prepared to use him regularly, so they were just kind of like holding pattern him. Like,
I think still they doing just genuinely did not know his contract status, which makes it really hard to use people sometimes.
Yeah, but this, the dogs as a general, it's a shame they can't do war dogs. That I wish New Japan would give them that. But
the dogs in general. I think if Joe Maloney didn't sign an AEW, they don't want to like.
Yeah,
when they're missing a piece.
What if they could be the battle dogs? Okay. The conflict dogs.
The conflict dogs sounds so lifeless.
And that's why I like it. But all three of them have been a hit, but he works much better with the the raw dogs would be amazing. I don't see that lasting long, Tim, though I do appreciate it. Dogs of War is a good one. There's
Dogs of War is giving, it's giving It's Always Sunny vibes, and I like it.
Yes. But they are much better as the group, and they're a lot of fun. I agree with you that I don't like two interference, but at least this one was in service of what's going to be at the pay-per-view, I'm assuming, sure. Which is probably a trios. I popped for the Roddy thing big time. Because I easily could have seen him
joining the dogs. And,
yeah, like he is in some, I mean, a lot of his career has been spent as a heel. So it wouldn't shock me that he joins a heel faction, and he is okay. I gotta give Jesse credit. Altercation Dogs is funny. Pre-dog night. Jesus, God, we aren't your sour grass, but these are great dog names. I mean, this is the pun of the night. But he has the wrestling style that would fit perfectly in with the dogs. Like, he's that brutal kind of wrestler, you know, the backbreaking god and whatnot. But what is it? The Messiah, the backbreaker, or something like that. I forget what his nickname is, but. But when he stood up for Orange, I was pop. I was so happy. That was like, Yes, you know, because first of all, I loved the conglomeration and I loved his role in it as like the grouchy uncle. I was buying into the sitcom thing. Like they were all the fun family and he was the grouchy uncle. And oh, it's just so good. And I'm very excited for the matches they're going to have because they're all incredible wrestlers. So
truly, like David Finlay and Roddy Strong, I am intrigued. I got to give Joe Holberg credit because he was the first one to point that out. And I was like, oh, God, yeah, just that in a singles match would be so fun. I've also, if they want to heat up the trios division, they now have the parts for it. They got the Rascals, they got the Dogs. Like, they've done a good job rebuilding this tag division, but they can heat up the trios if they want to stop having it be for people that back up the world champion. And I would not be mad about the Dogs doing that. That could be really, really fun. But if this just leads to more amalgamations of these guys fighting, I'm also not mad about that. That's a really, really fun group of guys.
This isn't last week. Last week I had a much longer, more extended trios belt rant, and I'm not going to go on it now. But the trios belts were made for a group like the Dogs.
Agreed.
It just they're not. None of them is as great as all three of those wrestlers are right now. None of them are set up for a singles belt at the moment. Sure. There's just not in that story. Give them the fucking trios titles and make them look like complete and total badasses who are untouchable.
Well, what's really fun about them is they feel like an honest to God unit. And it certainly feels like Gabe Kidd is the leader of it a bit, but it's not because Clark Connors doesn't hold his own. Dave Finlay was obviously the leader of the Bullet Club most recently. So he is obviously leader material as well. But I kind of like when all three guys have such distinct personalities but can all carry their own. I feel like Clark Connors has seemed impossibly cool since coming over. Like the way they've rolled him out has been like, I buy that he's a badass. It's really fun.
It helps when the groups are legit. I think they're legitimately friends. And I think that always helps because you can, like you said, they do feel they're different, but they fit. And if you can establish one real trio to be your trios champ, you can then build that into so other trios can be built to fight them that are actually real. But they're just so badass. It would let them be badass with belts while you kept them away from individual titles for a while. It works perfectly. Since you only got three of them, if you had gotten all four, I can understand. Two are going to break off another tag and whatever, but that's not what happened. You got three, use three. Man, imagine them versus the Rascals in a feud at some point.
I was just going to say, like, the Rascals getting an early shot and not quite beating them because they're just too vicious, but then circling back in 3 months to be the ones to dethrone them would be so much fun. That would be so much fun.
And what bothers, and then I'll let it go because we don't need another. When a tag team wins the tag titles, it doesn't feel lesser for the individuals involved. It doesn't feel like, oh, these guys don't matter because they won the tag titles. Like, that's a huge fucking deal when a tag team wins the tag titles. If you can make that the trio, if you give it the right attention, the trio's titles can feel the same way. So the Dogs won't feel unimportant because they're trio's champions. In fact, the reverse will happen. It'll make the belts feel important because suddenly these three awesome fuckers are champs and they're so badass. And that way, when you're ready for a Gabe Kidd run or a Finlay run of a singles belt, you're not like, where did they come? No, they've been in the trios and now that's done.
It's also just like one thing that I've noticed is when they have signings from New Japan, they just understand how stables work because that's how they're raised. Like Kyle Fletcher gets how a stable works. Like all these guys understand how stables work because it's a stable run promotion. There's very, very few guys that are just on their own in New Japan of any. So I think they know how to make that work. I would love to see them restore some integrity back to the trios. And to your point too, it's like, I understand that Hobbs left and they had to get him off the ops, but let's not pretend like they were doing a ton with them with the ops beforehand. So
I am dying at the dog names in the chat. Tim McFall just came out with Redacted Dogs.
The Redacted Dogs. I saw a good one before too. What was it?
They're Squabble Dogs. Dust Up Dogs, Three Dogs
and Conversation Canines was really good.
Oh, that's a good one too. That's a
good one.
Oh, yeah. Now you guys.
Well, we're ending up closing with our main event match, which is pretty funny because we skipped all around today. But we do close with the last match. We were talking trios. We had some people on the Fightful side saying Tommaso Ciampa leading Butcher and Blade as a trio would be super fun, and I agree with that. But we got a taste of Tommaso Ciampa with FTR tonight against Mark Briscoe and the Young Bucks, people calling them Dem Bucks, which I thought was cute. But this was chaotic and fun. I think we've had 2 years without a Bucks FTR match, and this one's going to be in the Bucks home state. So I don't hate them running it back. It feels like it's setting up for a Cope and Christian return. So we'll see. I could definitely see them doing a TLC match with all three of those teams at Wembley. That could be super fun. But tonight was a blast. You had the super kick party from the Bucks. You had the froggy bow from Mark Briscoe. FTR absolutely launching Nick Jackson through a table. Spike pile driver onto the announce desk. But I like the finish here because Ciampa hits a knee strike on Briscoe to get the win. Ciampa lost his title and lost again. So I'm glad that they were like, we're going to give him the pin in this. I thought that was a good touch to keep him feeling important on the show. But afterward, Ciampa keeps attacking Briscoe and finishes him with an air raid crash through two chairs. I gotta say, like, the beauty of having alternatives in wrestling is that Danhausen belongs in WWE and Tommaso Ciampa belongs in AEW, and both of them are in better creative positions for it, and everybody's getting paid. Like, I have loved what Tommaso Ciampa has brought to the table since he showed up. He's in incredible shape. I can't get over that he's only 41 because he has looked 45 to 47 for the past decade. He's just has this renewed life. The presentation has made him feel so important so quickly. I love it. I love it. It's so nice to see people be able to hop to different environments. It keeps things fresh. But I was thinking about that this week because Danhausen already off to a great start cursing people on Raw and SmackDown, and seeing things like this from Ciampa tonight, I'm like, this is why we have options in this world, and it's a beautiful thing. Super fun, crazy chaotic. I had a blast watching it. This on a go-home episode to a pay-per-view, why not? This was super fun for me. What did you think?
A couple things. First, Tyler on. Thanks for joining us late. It's always a good fun time in the chat. Lord Kev with power puppies is killing me. So I actually want to address two things. One, we talked about Danhausen last week because he was kind of the news of the week. Sure. Since that for me. And I'm going to reiterate, because now it's been a couple more shows, that yes, the initial introduction not done right, I don't think. Awesome. But ever since then, nailed it. And it's just been him. Listen, he's not going to wrestle a ton in WWE, and he doesn't need to. He is so good at the backstage stuff where he just, and he's selling merch and kids are going to love him. And I think you at some point you do what AEW did do, which is you attach him to a team, a fan friendly team, as like their mascot in a way. And like but the only issue I have to work my way up to is the way he's cursing people. Because he's not quite as, you know, it's a little more, you are cursed.
And it's been all backstage so far. So.
But it's just taken a little bit for me to get used to it, but so good. I can't, he's fits in perfectly there. I can't, as does Ciampa with AEW. And as one LT says, the curses have paid off. I was sending you a text the first time he cursed Dominic. And I said, if Dominic wins, they've ruined Danhausen.
Yep.
But he lost. They get him. Whoever brought him in and has explained who he is understands Danhausen. Like, that's except for his disappearing act.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. Except for his disappearing act. I still think it would be funnier if when someone turns their head and they turn back and it's like, where'd he go? And you just see him like walking away in the back so that he didn't actually get away. He's just walking away. But anyway, this match was awesome. Of course, again, with the people involved, how could it not be? I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about the Ciampa FTR. I knew they would work, but Ciampa is better as a heel. He just is. I mean, he's too scary to be a great face. Like, he's got that, like, he's a psycho killer. Like, he's that way.
And they presented him that way, too. Like, his,
yeah.
The second he showed up, that was what came up on the Tron, was psycho yeah. killer.
And it's not to say he couldn't work as a face. I mean, obviously, AEW loves their faces that are crazy. I mean, Hangman is vicious as all holy hell, but he's a face. The thing about it is, unlike Hangman, Ciampa doesn't necessarily have the same code for his character. So he fits so well as a heel. So I loved this. I think it was great. Like you said, good to give him the pin. He had just taken two losses, which didn't really hurt him because he's Ciampa. And, you know,
like, don't give him three.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's enough of a legend in the business at this point, especially for AEW fans, that he could come in with a couple losses. And he had already won a belt. So, like, I think this is fantastic. Obviously, I don't want him I don't want him involved in this feud between the Bucks and FTR, because just go to your own thing. I do think we are setting up for a Copeland and Christian return, which will be fun. I know some people, but they've been gone long enough. I think it's going to feel really fresh and a lot of fun to see them do their thing. Sure. What I'm curious is, after Ciampa beats Briscoe, is it right to Kyle, or who's his next feud? That's, and in a good way, like, that's a lot of fun to not know where they could take him. So many directions, and they'll all be fun.
I'm very intrigued too, because I have no idea what Johnny Gargano's status is, and I don't immediately need them to tag or be in a feud with each other if he is showing up in AEW. But the fact that it was FTR and Ciampa, when those two had some of the best tag matches you will ever see in NXT Black and Gold, does make me scratch my head a little bit. Working with each other, because they've been doing so for years too. That might have just been a fun pull from there.
I think it was a good way. I think it was, if you want my opinion, I don't think Johnny wrestling is I think that would be out there if he was. Someone's boss is very good at finding that information out, and
I know he's been working too. I don't think he's gotten a time frame either way.
See, 1LT wants Okada. That's not where my brain went. My brain went after his feud with his soon-to-be former partner to Speedball.
I wouldn't hate that. I'm also intrigued to see, like, he could be the kind of guy to lead a group of people. I don't know. I haven't heard that that's a plan. But, like, I guess it's all, like, are they taking the Trios division seriously or aren't they? Because, like, Ciampa and two other people versus the War Dogs intrigues me greatly. Like, this is part of the blessing of having such a ridiculous, ridiculous roster depth.
But it also is why it's infuriating when they don't let the Trios division just be its own thing. Because you could be using six guys in an individual feud. And likely 12 total if you had one non-title Trios feud. Be wonderful. You could be using all these guys up.
Well, and they might be headed toward that. Like, they did bring in the Rascals, they did bring in the War Dogs. Like, they tend to, like, bring in fresh pieces and realign a lot. Like, they did that with the entire mid card. You know what I mean? So we'll see what happens. But
I know we're wrapping up, but you know how lucky you are that the Rascals have been awesome so far in AEW? Because if they had come in any bit bad, the amount of Rascal Flatts jokes I'd be making is just ungodly.
I'm surprised you haven't found ways to just engineer that in more often.
They've been too good.
They're now, really good.
If they get really truly laid out, I'm gonna say that's a Rascal Flatt on his back, but
sure. I would expect nothing less. One thing that I've really liked about the way the Rascals have come in is that Myron Reed, like, he always felt like the little brother of that group, kind of, but he's just been fantastic. And it's nice to see him get the same kind of shine. I would love it if we had, like, the Dogs winning these Trios titles, and then in a few months, the Rascals being the ones to dethrone them. I think that would be absolutely fantastic. But I thought tonight's episode, especially for a go-home, I was like, you don't see AEW's better with it, but I was like, this was almost all wrestling for a go-home. Like, that's pretty rare. So I thought that was fun. Very much looking forward to this pay-per-view. We do get a collision as well because the pay-per-view is on a Sunday, boo. But I've had a lot of fun with this first couple months of AEW. They are on quite a heater. Any pay-per-view predictions? We won't go match by match, but any returns, debuts you're anticipating, anything like that?
I don't know about the returns. We did talk about maybe Copeland and Christian coming out after that match. Should be the time to bring them back.
I would like to see Sheeta back, man. Like, come on.
Yeah, seriously. I do think Hangman loses. Trying to think of anything else. I do think Takeshita loses, and that's when the Don Callis family, his role in the Don Callis family is over. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's all the only big predictions I have.
I don't know if we're anywhere near getting, but I think a Dakota Kai debut would be awesome. There was a report on Fightful Select that Will Ospreay has been in the ring training at Dynamite. I don't know if he's ready for a proper return, but he could always return as a character to set something up or something like that. I don't know if I have anything in the way of that too much either, as far as like returns, debuts, etc. Copeland and Christian, I would almost expect at this point, because I think that's why you run FTR in the Bucks. I don't think you do that otherwise. And I don't know how MJF and Hanger ends, but I think something suspicious happens. Other than that, I'm just really looking forward to this. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. This is a hell of a card. Love that Marina's on it. Moxley has just been singing her praises on her work ethic, and she's seems to have grown so much as far as the character side of things. So her and Tony should be a lot of fun as well. Looking forward to all this. Should be a fantastic pay-per-view. And on the other side of it, on next Wednesday, we will recap it as well as Dynamite. Looking forward to that. Ryan, give us a little plug-ski. Let us know where people can find you and this here podcast.
Well, I'm on all socials for us at Mark Order Pod. So, you know, interact with us. And then I have a history YouTube/blog, which I do got to get the blog going back up, but that's kind of a rework it a little bit. But YouTube, Here for History, at Here for History on most socials, or at _ Here for History. I won't have a new one out this week, or I didn't have one out last week, mainly because being sick for about a month and a half really does put you down in terms of worth. Ability.
I know the feeling.
But the beauty about history here, guys, is it's evergreen. So if you haven't seen my stuff, go please watch it and enjoy it.
You can find me on Fightful doing a bunch of stuff on a bunch of days over there. You can catch me here on Wednesdays. And I'm in the last stretch of a 30-day Instagram challenge. So you can catch me at Miss Kate Fabe there. And I'm in the middle of preparing to move. So once I'm done with that, I will be back to YouTube content, God willing, because I'm not going to like get us started to then move and get restarted. That's enough. We'll just start on the other side of it. But I appreciate y'all. Thank you for hanging out with me. I know I'm very sporadic around here. It's always like weeks and weeks in a row. Like, it's always like I'm back and then 3 weeks gone and then I'll be here for 5 weeks or whatever. So blame Sean. It's his fault. Yeah,
that's it. I do blame Sean.
As you should. Head over to Pro Wrestling Tees if you want a Mark Order t-shirt as well. We will see you on the other side of a revolution, my friends. Have a good night.
You expect me to do things like put up the outro overlay, turn up the volume, and then hit outro.
Oh, what was the show?